This is Report to Wyoming.
The Wyoming Game and Fish Department selected four landowners from around the state for its 30th annual Landowner of the Year Award. The four winners are Turtle Rock Ranch, that's Mark and Angela Grant in the Casper region, along with NL Land and Livestock Incorporated in Lander, J Bar Nine Ranch managers Bob Curtis and his family, and the Falksa Ranch in the Sheridan region. So for this episode, I asked Mark Grant to come and talk with me a little bit about being a ranch owner. We get started just trying to get a picture of where the ranch is located at.
We're in Converse County and live on the mountain south of Glen Rock, about 20 miles.
Okay, and the ranch is over 100 years old, right?
Correct. This year, 139, I believe.
Oh, my goodness. And has it been in your family this whole time?
Yes. My great-grandfather came and homesteaded here in 1886.
What kind of stories do you have from those days?
That first winter, or the winter before, is the winter that killed millions of head of cattle, and that's somewhat what allowed him to homestead and find land that wasn't already taken by some of the land barons. But there was still some pretty bad storms right after he moved. I remember him telling about chopping holes in roofs where they had cattle in order to lower hay and water to them and try and keep them alive for the winter. So
what possesses someone to try their luck on a ranch, cattle ranch in Wyoming, specifically like outside of Glen Rock, Wyoming? I bet it looked quite differently back then.
They came from Iowa, actually. His father was kind of a wanderer, and they had spent some time in the North Woods cutting timber, and then they kept that trade and came out west, him and two brothers, to cut railroad ties for the railroad. But that was about the time that the Homestead Acts were really progressing in Wyoming, and so they looked for land, and they found what they thought was a nice valley there. Glen Rock didn't exist then. Even Douglas was just founded in that year, so they actually came from the Medicine Bow Rock River side and found a valley they thought would be fertile and a good place to raise families and make their way in the world.
And the rest is literally history.
Correct.
How did they kind of preserve their story so that you could talk to us about it today?
Their father, Daniel, wrote memoirs, and that's somewhat the best, but then it's just been oral tradition. My dad was very much into history, and he could repeat stories, and then I had him write a lot down, and I wrote down things as he told me so that we would have some sort of record to keep passing down.
Oh, sure. What kind of family dynamics were the original ranchers? Did they have a lot of children? Were there lots of neighbors, cousins, that kind of thing?
Yes. So Ulysses was my great-grandfather, and he came out with his brother Fred and his brother Will. And they were single men except for Fred. He had a wife and one daughter, and Fred actually died of a ruptured appendicitis ruptured appendix on the ranch. My great-grandfather actually killed a horse trying to go get help, just ran it to death trying to save him. And then my great-grandfather went back to Iowa and married a girl from there, and they had I think six children. And then all of his brothers and sisters came out and homesteaded around, and he purchased land, and most of them got out of ranching except for one. But in the end, kind of the whole valley was related.
Oh,
so
wow.
If there was other homesteaders that came, daughters of Yuli would marry them, or their daughters would marry his sons. But now there's a few of us left. We have some close cousins on either side of us, but most of the land has been purchased by wealthy people looking for the view.
Oh, sure. The name Turtle Rock Ranch is kind of fun. Do you know how that came to be?
Yes. So my great-grandfather named his ranch Snowshoe Ranch after his branding iron is in the shape of a horseshoe. And when my grandfather kind of went out on his own, he just kind of went by his name, and so did my dad. But it seemed like he had a harder time getting credit and such at businesses. And there's a giant rock boulder, I guess, behind our homes that looks like a turtle. And so my mom came up with the name of Turtle Rock Ranch when we formed a limited liability company in 1994.
Oh, I love that. I was really hoping there was a rock that looked like a turtle. So
yeah, definitely.
Glad to hear that. How did you guys get started in, well, I guess first let's tell the listeners exactly what you guys do at Turtle Rock Ranch.
So the occupation of rancher kind of evokes this Hollywood stereotypical image of a rancher, and there is a lot to that, but anymore I think the job title should probably be natural resources manager. So you're trying to manage what resources Mother Nature gives you, whether it's the water and the quality of your soil, and produce a product. And from the most part, we try and turn that into grass, which then our cattle turn into healthy food for people. But we also have to manage the soil so it doesn't erode, and we have to manage the wildlife on our land. We like to see it, but you also have to manage it for populations, because with man existing in the world, there's much difference whether it's predation or just migration corridors. And so you have to work with different stakeholders in the community, whether that's the hunters or the Wyoming Game and Fish, and we all need to work together for a sustainable habitat ecosystem in our what area that we have control of.
Okay. What kind of operations is the ranch into right now? It's also seasonal, so.
Correct.
Just fattening babies up?
So right now we just finished up with our calving season. We run Angus and Hereford cross cattle, and we calve a little later than the rest of the world because of being up in the mountain. We can have really bad snows well into May. And so we've just finished that, and now we've started harvesting hay for to feed the cattle in the winter. And then as we progress into fall, it'll go back to more cattle work with putting bulls in, pulling bulls out, weaning calves, and then start feeding cattle to get them through our harsh winters.
How many staff members do you have?
So we're purely a family operation. So me and my wife, Angela, we have two children, a daughter, Kayla, and a son, Austin, and they're teenagers, so they work on the ranch as well. And then my brother is on the ranch, Craig, and his wife, Mary, and they have two children that are, one's a teen and one's pretty close. And so we all work on the ranch. We all try to dive into the activities that suit us best, whether it's irrigating, calving, haying, repairing fences.
I grew up in this world, so a lot of haying, and we always did square bales as well, which I'm sure you know is a real pain in the butt, and somebody stacks them by hand. It was often me and my twin sister, and there's six of us children. So when I said your staff members, I was saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek, knowing already probably some teenagers and preteens, which is a great way to grow up and learn a lot about hard work and safety, listening, following rules, especially when it comes to haying, to driving equipment. Oh my gosh, I got every piece of equipment stuck in different ditches. And I'm sure that you could write a book of essays on kind of the funny but also frustrating things that happen when you're working on a ranch.
Yes, for sure. Just yesterday, my brother was swathing in a spot that, you know, we've run a swather through there for as long as we've had one, probably since the 70s, and have never got stuck in that spot. But he found a new spot to get stuck in yesterday. But it kind of leads back to wildlife. We discovered that beaver had created a new dam in the creek that had backed up and flooded, or at least made that area wetter than normal. So
And you're so in tune with nature and weather patterns because of the work that you do, right? So it never fails that when you're preparing to bale hay, it's going to rain or whatever it is.
Very much so. Used to be we would tune in to the radio every morning to listen to the weather. And now we constantly check an app, you know, and check radar and see, well, should we cut that field today or should we leave it or should we rake or should we wait? So that you're not spending money on diesel when maybe 3 hours later you're going to get rained on anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a constant balancing act.
In Sublette County, I still remember there was a landline. You dialed 307-276-3996, and that would tell you the National Weather Service's little report for the area. And so that's funny. But you guys do a lot more than just raising cattle. There's this whole other side of it that's historical preservation and being in the service industry, would you say?
Yes, at least to some degree. My parents came up with the idea of this Mountain Memories as they got older and kind of wanted to step away from the ranch a bit and turn over more control to me and my brother. And my dad always had or loved to have draft horses, and so he would take them to weddings or often like Glen Rock has Deer Creek Days or the Sheep Herders Rendezvous, and he would give rides to people or, you know, take wedding parties around. And then we also, my mom is a people person, so she would have people come and give them tours of the ranch, you know, the barns and the animals, and my dad was very much into the history, and so he could tell everyone the origins of the ranch and as well as what's going on currently.
Oh, excellent. Okay. And then I see there's a website online where people can see pictures if they want. Of course, locals probably aren't looking to stay the night, but what kind of people want to stay that come and would like to stay at Turtle Rock Ranch and have that kind of experience?
Anymore, it's mostly hunters because it gives them much closer access to the hunting opportunities that we have. And then, but we do have people traveling through that want to experience staying in a genuine sheep wagon, and other people that come and want to hike around the ranch. We've had groups of bird watchers come and stay. So,
oh, that's pretty cool. Okay. And so this, it's not a huge operation either. This would just be in the family, a few people taking care of it, making sure bookings and stuff are going well. And
correct, yes.
Oh, excellent. Okay, now let's talk about the award. You, the ranch, won Landowner of the Year. There were a couple of other people who also got that award this year, but that's pretty cool. How'd you find that out?
Our local warden that is basically our partner in the management of wildlife on the ranch, he is the one who nominated us, Cody Bish, and we couldn't have the ranch the way it is without him being our partner. And he had nominated us, and he called up to let us know we won. We didn't even know we had been nominated. And then also Brian Olson, I'm not sure of his exact title, but he is kind of the manager here on the Casper region, and he came up and visited with us about the award as well. My parents had actually won it sometime in the late 90s. We're not exactly sure of the year. And so now I guess it's my brother and my family's turn.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so what was that like? Have you gone to a ceremony yet?
So there is an official ceremony in September. I believe it's in Laramie, and they have a dinner, and they show videos of and pictures of all the ranches that won this year. And I think some of the, like the governor and some of those offices come and get to have a dinner and visit with everyone and just kind of celebrate everyone doing good for our state.
And one of the words in the award recognizes your stewardship. I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit more and how you're thinking about stewardship as a rancher.
Well, we've always been raised to believe that we're lucky enough to have this land because of the blood, sweat, and tears of our forefathers, and that we should keep sharing it. So we've always allowed hunting on our land in some form or fashion. Currently, we give private permission earlier in the seasons, and then later on, we also belong to a hunter management area, the Deer Creek Hunter Management Area. And so working hand in hand with the Game and Fish to decide how many people we should let in to give adequate opportunity, yet not just run all the animals out of the area so that some harvests can occur.
Okay, and then what about sustainability? Sustaining the product that you're trying to, when we say product, calves, right? Continuing to have a successful cattle ranch, and all the things that go with that. So growing good grass. Maybe explain for people who didn't grow up on a ranch what kind of things you're thinking about.
So it's all a balancing act, and it's often a gamble because you go into every year not knowing what Mother Nature is going to give to you as far as weather, so moisture or how much wind. And so we believe in trying to be moderate and balance it. So we stock, our stock rate, I guess, is pretty low for the amount of land we have. We're not trying to maximize and to take every bit of grass we have, because you need to leave some grass for reseeding, and then also keep that grass healthy enough that the native types can outcompete your invasive grasses like cheatgrass or bulbous bluegrass or even just thistles and other weeds like that. So as long as you're taking care of it so it can stay healthy, it'll last you years and years and generations so that you can keep doing what we love to do.
It is so interesting. I don't think a lot of people think about how much goes into growing grass. That's a full-time job.
Very much so. Early this year, we had a very mild winter, which is welcome because we don't have to spend so much time and money on feeding the cattle. But as we were coming into April, it was still very, very dry. And so you start making contingency plans in your head of what you're going to do. And some years just stay like that, like 2012, and then you get lots of fires. But this year it started raining, and then we got really good grass, and our hay is pretty good for harvesting this year. So it's just a roll of the dice every year. So we try and stay in the middle of the road, and if you don't get too far as far as trying to maximize everything, then we feel like you can do better for the future.
Awesome. And then, okay, draft horses, you said. Does that mean Clydesdale?
We've had some of everything. My father passed away 2 years ago, and so we haven't continued with the draft horses as much as when he was there. So we often had Belgians and Percherons, which were the ones that are up to a ton in size. And then as he got older, it was harder and harder to harness the team because the leather harness can weigh a lot, and you're trying to throw it over your head on those big horses. So he found Norwegian Fjords, which are draft ponies, and for their size, they can pull a tremendous amount. So that's what we have left now is the smaller draft ponies.
Oh, I'm going to have to look that up. I'd like to see a Norwegian Fjord.
Okay. They're pretty cool. They're, you know, smaller in stature, but very stocky and fluffy, and have kind of a unique blonde and black mane.
What other hobbies do you guys have on this ranch? Anything like my mom always had chickens in a garden and kind of those homesteady things that go that work well with a ranch?
Yes, since we're only 20 miles from Glen Rock, but sometimes we can be snowed in for it. When I was a kid, it could be weeks at a time. We would have to use snowmobiles to travel in and out. With today's technology, we're not snowed in quite as much, but so we have milk cows and chickens and ducks and pigs. And so still kind of doing everything that my great grandfather started out with as a homesteader, and then both my wife and my mother garden. And so,
well, that's really cool. I just did a post on the henfluencers of these chicken people on Instagram, and how many people are crazy about chickens now, and it's really taken off. The idea of being a homesteader is appealing to a lot of people, but I don't know if everybody's willing to put in the work that it takes. We had milk cows growing up, and it's when sports season is in full swing, you still have to milk the cow every day, you know. And so that, when I left home, I thought when I went to college, I'll never want to be tied down to a place like that again. And now I'm trying to convince my husband that we should do it. But it is something that people don't always think about. It's an everyday, all day thing. You know, horses get out of, they get out, the fences break, horses get out in the middle of the night, never at a convenient time. So what do you guys think about that homesteader craze or kind of the trending? Do you pay much attention to it or no?
Oh, mostly it's kind of comical to us. There will be posts about things that we feel like is just common knowledge and wouldn't even think about needing to educate someone about. But I think it is important that people are trying it and relearning it and putting the word out there, because there's such a gap anymore between, I guess, the main population of how their food is grown. There's, I don't know the statistics, but there are so many people out there that have no idea how any of their food is produced, whether it's the beef or even lettuce or milk. And so then you get into the political arena, and there'll be people trying to get rid of farming or tractors because of how it's being bad for the environment. But I don't think it even equates in their mind that when they get rid of that, they could literally be starving themselves to death.
Yeah. Another statistic that I found shocking was that 60% of our food is wasted. So farm-grown products and ranch-grown products. And that's really frustrating. I think there is a disconnect where maybe people don't always see the faces attached to the thing they're eating. And so it's easier to just waste things, throw things away. And I think we could start there. That would be a more moderate place to start before saying, let's just do away with ranching altogether. Yeah, to your point, I don't think that it's very logical to do away with anything altogether.
I agree. And I agree as well with the cutting of the waste. And I think the homesteading can help with that, because any food that doesn't get eaten around my place always ends up going somewhere to produce something else, whether it's the chickens or the pigs or the cats or the dogs. And in the cities, it just ends up in landfills, it seems. And so if there's enough people out there doing this homesteading that maybe you can get the spoiled produce from Walmart and actually put it back to use raising pigs or chickens, I think that would be a great place to start.
Oh, I agree. Okay, what kind of things are in your garden? I'm very curious, because I love to talk gardening.
It's difficult up there, because even just recent as a week ago, it was down to 34 degrees. So we often plant late, but my wife and mother will start the seeds early in the house. And so they have tomatoes and peppers and, different herbs, basil and those kinds of things. And then it doesn't seem like the corn works very well for us with the wind or something. Mm-hmm. It doesn't pollinate. So what corn we get, there isn't actually much kernels on them. And then once you can start planting in the ground, we have all the typical carrots and peas and beans. And my kids love to go out in the garden later in the summer and just pick it right there and eat it plum fresh.
I have this weird thing where I can just go stand out in the garden and just stare at things. I can just, like, an hour goes by, I'm just watching the sprinklers water things. I'm like, there's something about being in a garden. I just love it. So you guys are busy. Again, not a lot of staff. It's just your family. How do you make time for extracurriculars, and what kind of things are your teenagers interested in outside of the ranch?
it's hard to have anything outside the ranch. We do a lot of hunting, both my wife and I. So my kids grew up hunting some, and my son just lives that lifestyle. So if he has a free minute, he has trail cameras placed all around the ranch. So he's trying to see that big mule deer or that bear that has cubs this year, or we have lots and lots and lots of elk. And so it's not too hard to get pictures of elk. So he kind of lives for hunting. My wife gardens is her hobby, and my daughter is an artist, so she likes to paint and draw and even build crafty things. And for me, it's hunting is my only kind of getaway thing.
Now, to circle back to something you touched on earlier, kind of the small ranches and the surrounding areas being bought off by richer entities, and then who knows what happens with them down the road. How are you kind of thinking about preservation and continuing to be a good landowner and maybe even want, you know, hopefully sustaining the ranch? That was a loaded question, because I'm like, I don't know what your plans are. Sorry.
It is a loaded question because it's very difficult to see the future. Right now, one of the scary things is that our property taxes keep increasing because of the prices that these wealthy landowners are willing to pay for just the view. And then with estate planning, it is another big one. With my father passing away just a couple years ago, luckily my mom and him, and then me and my brother, as we got older, had spent a lot of time trying to prepare for that eventuality. And so the passing of the ranch to me and my brother has gone okay. But the worst part is the moving goal line with the federal government of never knowing how much estate taxes you may or may not have to pay, because those can be really debilitating to a ranch. As far as the future, right now, cattle prices are wonderful. And so we're doing well, but you never know. One year you can make $2 a pound, and then the next year it might drop back to under a dollar. And again, the federal government, they'll tax you on the good years and don't allow you to save very well for the years in the future that could be poor. So currently we just kind of have our head down, keep working hard, keep looking for opportunities that we don't feel will cost too much. And in the end, you know, you can look at conservation easements, but the perpetuity of those is concerning. We have done some logging on our property in the past in tough years to kind of help with the income. And you just never know what's on the horizon. Maybe some of this carbon sequestering could help on our ranch as far as some income that's diversified from our regular activities.
How could your everyday Joe Schmo help with local ranches, right? Not just putting money into the beef industry and who knows where those dollars go, but helping with ranches in Wyoming?
That's another kind of loaded question. We get lots of offers, especially from hunters, to come just help with the physical work. But it takes some training. Oftentimes it seems like ranchers have the stereotype of being less than intelligent, but anymore, just tractors are loaded with technology and simple tasks. I'm pretty picky about as far as fences. You have to understand physics, and just trying to train my kids now that to be safe yet do things right can be really challenging. I would say support local beef more than just at the grocery stores, because the way the corporate chain there works, there's not much flow back to the grassroots producers. And yes, it might cost more to purchase part of a beef from a local rancher, but you're going to know who you got that product from, and it's going to be a better product than one that traveled states away and through some manufacturing facility and then traveled states back and have a lot less cost to the environment.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.